Hey everybody, it's Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
Want to welcome everybody to this evening's program. Yeah. 66 and clear. Oh, God, it's getting cold. It must be getting closer to fall, which is good. Our guest tonight is Samuel Chung. He is the L.A.-based certified court reporter and Chinese translator. Mr. Chung is here to discuss his Taibula prophecy, The Golden Planet, The Abduction to the Ninth Planet, written by the late Frenchman Michel de Marquet. In this 1987 book, de Marquet claims he was transported to a different planet by super intelligent race of giants. Chung spent some time with him prior to his death and believes his account to be true. Samuel, welcome to the program. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. Thank you for inviting me here.
So I've got to talk about the court reporting and your journey to get to the meeting this guy first, and then I'll probably do one of those little fun adverts I was talking about, and then we'll move into talking about him and his book. So what made you want to become a court reporter?
Court interpreter.
Sorry.
Actually, no problem. Yeah, court interpreter, because I speak Chinese and I decided that I could do better and make a better living by becoming a certified court interpreter. So I got my license in the state of California and also New York. I'm also a federal court registered interpreter, and I do a lot of work for attorneys and judges and also prosecutors, and it's pretty fun doing this kind of work.
It's also going to be kind of difficult, though. I mean, I profess to know next to nothing about the Chinese language, but I just know it's difficult. So
it is a very different language. It is very difficult for a non-native speaker because it got four different tones, and it has to be someone native to be able to handle the four tones well.
Four tones. So, but when I see it wrote out, can you pick up the tone based on how it's wrote?
Well, it really, we have, if they're in the English letters, then we have to use a mark to indicate which tone it is. For example, the pronunciation ma, ma is the first tone, ma is the second tone, ma is the third tone, and then ma is the fourth tone. So those are the four different, like singing tones, like different pitches.
I know my listeners are out there laughing because I barely speak English at a third grade level, and you're talking about...
Yeah, it's very different.
And then to do it at a proficient level and then do it at a expert level, I guess I could call you. That's a fair statement at this point. So, man, that's
yeah,
incredible.
It is quite challenging because, people have to take the exam. And only about 5% of people pass the exam. It's a very rigorous and challenging exam for people to pass.
So I've got one more informal question about this because I'm just curious. You said New York and California, there's a bunch of states in the middle. Why none of them?
Because New York and California have the most Chinese-speaking population. And I thought, California is good enough for me to survive and for work and also to live, and I also added New York just to make people feel that I have the credentials.
Hey, works for you, it works for you. I don't argue. I'm just here to ask questions and learn some stuff. But let's get after it. Duckpondshop.com. Let's get after it. Duckpondshop.com. Okay, so talk to me about what got you interested in Michelle's book, because I'm sure you picked it up and read it, But then you went into translating it. But how did you come across it the first time?
The first time, you know, when I was young, I was always fascinated by the paranormal phenomena, and I was always curious about different things such as what really happened in the Bermuda Triangle, who really built the Great Pyramid of Egypt, and for what purposes. And I thought, also, I always thought that as human beings on Earth, we can evolve at a much faster pace. We can just learn from the ETs who have advanced civilization. That would be a shortcut for us, just to learn from the best, and then to get information about their technologies and how they live. Hopefully we can imitate and also be like them. So it's always in my subconscious mind to get as much information as possible from ETs. So when I came to the U.S., I searched the internet and also the libraries. One day I was searching on Amazon looking for books about ET contactees. So I accidentally found this book, Theobald Prophecy. At that time, it was titled Abduction to the Ninth Planet. So I borrowed the book from the library because at that time it was very expensive on Amazon. And I checked out, and halfway reading the book, I thought this book was amazing because it actually explained basically all the mysteries of the world, all the paranormal. And I couldn't put the book down because it really got a lot of information related to the stories in the Bible. I really didn't believe anything written in the Bible before reading this book, Theobald Prophecy, because to me, the stories in the Bible were just too incredible. But this book, Theobald Prophecy, connected all the dots of the stories in the Bible. So so that, there I am. I'm just so into the book because it contains a lot of the specific verifiable details, different from other New Age books, which seem to be very general and talk about the general ideas. But this book has so much detailed information that is so specific that people can actually look it up and verify.
So let's drill down on that before I shift forward again. Because I know there's somebody out there listening to this going, extra UFOs and alien phenomenon in the Bible, and they're scratching their head and going, we've already lost them. Can you shed a little bit more light on that before we keep going here?
Yes. Remember, if you know the Bible, you know Exodus, like Moses leading the Hebrews out of Egypt and the parting of the sea, which is people believe is the Red Sea, but actually the Sea of the Reeds, the Sea of Reeds. Actually, what according to this book, what actually happened was that this group of ETs was involved in leading the Hebrews out of Egypt and guiding Moses to Mount Sinai. And this is not the only thing that it mentioned about the stories in the Bible. It also talks about Jesus Christ. When I was reading the Bible, I was always wondering, like, you know, Jesus, if he was really able to perform all the miracles, why there was no record of him performing the miracles before the age of 30? It happened afterwards. Like, you know, if a person like him could do that, have this kind of extraordinary ability, there must have been some kind of record showing him, like, doing so at the age of 20 or 25. But there's no such record. And also there's record of Jesus going to India, and also there's evidence that there is a tomb of Jesus Christ in Shingo Village, Japan. And that made me wonder what really happened. Didn't Jesus die on the cross and resurrected 3 days after? It is indeed the case. And there is another story about it, and which this book, Theobald Prophecy, explains everything and connects all the dots about why people say Jesus visited India, and why there's a tomb of Jesus in Shingo Village, Japan, and also why Jesus actually died on the cross and resurrected 3 days after.
So, like I was saying, this is definitely not a traditional UFO story or New Age story, so I'm happy that we're here to bring them together? Because I've always thought there has been a connection, but it seems like you're helping me figure out what it is. So, now you read the book, and you got fascinated by it. I'm sure you read it probably more than once. But then you went above and beyond. Okay, bad pun. You met the author, or how did you come across? How did you then proceed to get down further down into that?
You know, when I was reading this book, I thought this book is really good. Okay, a lot of information. I can do research. But then when I read the postscript, the author Michel Demarquet says there are more incredible things that he was not allowed to write in the book because we were far from understanding them. That got me, because to me, this book is already incredible enough. What's more incredible, and what's more, that he was not allowed by the ETs to write in the book. That got me extremely curious. I decided to pay a visit to the author, Michel Demarquet. I searched on the internet and found that some of the tourists actually met him in on a southern island in Vietnam, but they didn't really reveal his exact address. So I decided to give it a try by flying to that island in southern Vietnam, and I showed a photo of his bungalow to a taxi driver after I landed in the airport, and then the taxi driver just took me there, and then I found him. That happened, yes.
Now, that's just as remarkable of a story as any of the rest of this at this point. Because, I'm thinking, if somebody walked up to me and showed me a picture of a house, could I pull it up in my local area and know where it is? That's just phenomenal to me. Okay, now, getting there is one thing, which is phenomenal, okay? But now you're there. Well, take me through this process, because this has to be an interesting moment in time when you decide to walk up to the door.
Yes. He was taking an afternoon nap at that time, and I waited until he woke up. After he met me and found out that I was there for this book, and he got really annoyed. He was a very private person. He didn't really want to be bothered because of the book. He wanted to meet people, tourists, not specifically for the purpose of asking questions about the book. So he was really his attitude was not that pleasant to me. But then after two or three days, his attitude changed. He said that I could help him by following up with a contract that he signed with a publisher in China who paid him $2,000 for the copyright of the book to be published in China, but never contacted him again. He didn't know whether the book was published or not. He wanted me to contact that publisher. So I was trying to please him because I wanted to know what was not written in the book. So I was so eager to cater to all his wishes. I contacted the Chinese publisher. It turned out that they paid but didn't really publish the book because they were afraid of the censorship. They say that if they were to publish the book, they would all lose their jobs in China. So they were really afraid of the Chinese government. So I had to find another publisher to publish the book. So I tried and I found a publisher, and it was published as a science fiction in China. Later it got published in Taiwan as well as a nonfiction. And Michel Demarquet was really happy, and he invited me a second time to visit him. And he said he would tell me the one thing he was not allowed to write in the book.
So you built this the relationship. Now you've mentioned that you had it published in China and Taiwan, which brings up a fascinating point that it was a bestseller in both countries, which I know is not an easy feat by any stretch of the imagination.
Yes, for China, it was really amazing event that happened, that it turned out to be a bestseller, one of the bestsellers in China. I guess it's probably because there was a strong censorship that no books, very few books on spirituality was published in China. So that's why there was a vacuum, and this book filled the vacuum in China. And for Taiwan, it's a different story because internet influencer with 3 million followers or subscribers on YouTube talked about this book, and then it became an instant hit in the Taiwan book market. So people were buying this book like crazy, and actually it was sold out in most of the bookstores in Taiwan for a period of time.
So Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcast.com. Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcast.com. Okay, so let's get into his actual experience, because intelligent giants don't know. When I think ETs, I think small, too. So you're kind of shifting my whole orthodox of what I think tonight. So when he says giants, do you know how tall?
They're 8 or 9 foot tall. They're blonde, like Caucasian looking, Nordic looking. They're very beautiful. They have a very like enviable breasts to women, and also they have, but they're hermaphrodites. Like they have the male and female sexual organs on their body, so they never age. They're always look forever young, like in their 30s. They're always very happy. They seem like receiving good news all the time. So when they look at Michel Demarquet, the aliens, the ETs who are not familiar with him were wondering why was Michel Demarquet always so sad, because his facial expression, our facial expression, appear to them to be like a sad facial expression. They are always happy and glorious, and they're very radiant too, because they have a very bright aura, and they could perform all the miracles performed by Jesus Christ. They could heal people by using their intentions or mind. They can levitate. They can materialize objects. They can shapeshift. They can also kind of like do all the things that they wanted to do. It's amazing.
I was going to say, that sounds incredible to be able to do all those things. I mean, being able to do one of those things would be fun. Heal people.
Yeah.
Probably, I guess healing people wouldn't be fun, but shapeshifting and all the other stuff would be. Healing people would be just as important. How many times did he interact with these things?
Well, he was taken to their planet for 9 days. So they put in the entire trip, including the way there, and also after he spent 9 days on the way back, he was told a lot of things about the history of Earth, and how, where the black people, the yellow people, and the Jewish people came from, and also the Caucasian people. And who built the Great Pyramid? What happened in the Bermuda Triangle? And a lot of different things, which are extremely interesting. And this group of ETs, they actually treated him very nicely. He felt love, unconditional love, and he felt very comfortable. And he really didn't want to come back to Earth. He forgot his family in Australia. And he really was really surprised when they said, oh, it's time, we are going back, we are going home. And he was extremely surprised, because he wanted to stay there, because it seemed to him that Theoba, the name of the planet, Theoba was like a paradise to him.
Well, I'm assuming if everybody's happy, I wouldn't want to come back either. 9 days, so what happened on Earth for those 9 days? Does he remember anything that happened during those 9 days or not?
Well, he remembered everything. I mean, he was physically taken to their planet. So he witnessed and experienced everything. After he came back, he was asked or ordered to write a book reporting everything happened to him. And when he came back, he remembered a lot of things, and when he needed help, it's like the memories or the information was downloaded to him regarding what really happened to him on the planet, on their planet. So he received a lot of help when writing this book. That's why he was able to report all the details in the book.
Yeah, I was just thinking that I'd need some help too. I was joking with somebody this morning that I couldn't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. So, so he gets back and writes the book. What kind, does he have any, I mean, there's got to be trouble trying to get the book out there in the first, I mean, for him, the first time.
Yes. His experience happened in mid of 1987. And then he actually wrote the book in about a few months. But then he had a hard time finding a publisher. One reason was that he insisted the book to be published as a nonfiction in Australia. And all the publishers he contacted wanted to publish the book as a fiction, as a science fiction, and he refused. So he waited until in 1993 when the book was published in Australia. And that's about 2 years after the former Soviet Union broke up, like breakdown. And he said that he believes, Michel Demarquet believed that the timing was also important because it was the Ethiopians, the ETs, that timed the event of the publishing of the book, because that would cause the most effect on the people 2 years after after the former Soviet Union broke up.
So I've got a question here from Kat Ward of the Paranormal Heart. She's got a great question here for you. Did he ever get into, or did he ever find out why he was the one taken and commissioned to write this book?
Yes. According to this book, he had 80 past lives already. So he lived, he had 80 previous lives. And so he's considered like a soko. Only a soko can survive 9 days on their planet. Their planet is a category 9 planet. Earth is a category 1 planet. Only the people like him, like having had 80 previous lives or past lives, could survive for 9 days on a category 9 planet. He was told this, and there are not so many people on Earth who have had 90 past lives. So that's why they chose him, in addition to the fact that he's a man of action. And this I can testify because he really acted upon receiving information, and he didn't wait at all. The one thing he didn't write in the book, he told me within 5 minutes after meeting him the second time. So he was kind of like really prompt in taking action. And another reason that I believe there's another reason. He was a farmer and a landscaper in Australia. So he didn't have any college education, and he didn't have any predispositions or presuppositions. And he didn't have any agenda. A journalist, for example, would report things, but then a journalist would also add sensational details in order to sell the story better, to make it sell better. So I think there's another reason. He's like a blank piece of paper to write on. So he would objectively report everything that happened to him. So I think this is another reason they chose him.
See, we've mentioned the Jesus aspect of this. Was he a spiritual, religious man before this experience or after? Or did it change that look?
Well, he really didn't believe in the Catholic doctrine. And he was more leaning towards the beliefs or doctrines of Buddhism. But he was not a religious person at all before and after. This is more about spirituality other than religious beliefs. So according to him or in the book, knowledge is very important, especially spiritual knowledge. And when one receives or one obtains sufficient knowledge, then one would be enlightened enough or be like spiritually grown into someone that's kind of like know what is really going on around the world.
So speaking of going on around the world, did the Giants have any reviews or opinions on our earthly religion? Because let's be honest, we have a smattering of them. Smattering? Is that even a word? A bunch of them. There we go. Don't want to make you translate words that aren't real. Did I get into that at all?
I mean, in terms of religions, well, they talk about organized religions on Earth and also talk about what's really happening on Earth. In terms of the organized religions, they believe, the ETs believe that the organized religions are a curse on Earth because they tend to distort the original meanings of certain things. For example, they say that the teachings of Jesus Christ were followed for about 300 years or so. And then they were distorted by the councils of the Catholic Church. And the book is very specific about the four council meetings that intentionally distorted the original scriptures of the Bible. So they believe that organized religions on Earth is really a curse. And they also talk about what's really happening on Earth. They say that what's happening right now is not what they appear to be, because there are people running things behind the scenes. The financiers, everything is about money. The oil companies suppress clean energy technologies because hydrogen engines were invented earlier than this book published, much earlier than 1987 or 1991 or 1993, much earlier than that. But the oil companies suppressed the clean technologies, and so are the pharmaceutical companies and also the politicians. And a lot of they're asking us to wake up to what is really happening around us. And I got to meet Michel Demarquet twice and ask him a lot of questions about this. I say, who is really running different things behind the scenes? Who is really running the world? And Michel Demarquet said to me that according to Tao, the ET, there are 12 families that are running things that people don't know about. And I asked him, who are the 12 families and what are the names? He didn't tell me that, but I did a lot of my own research, and they're really not the family that people normally think they are. There are other people than the family that people normally think that they are. And Michel Demarquet also added the Catholic Church was also one of the religious organizations running behind certain things behind the scenes.
So before I forget, where can people get the book and find you and all that fun stuff? Because I'm sure people want to be checking out the book.
Yeah, they can search Theoba Prophecy on Amazon and get the book there. Theoba is spelled as Thioouba. B.S. in boy. Theoba or Heoba, the pronunciation is very similar to Jehovah. And there's a reason for this, because according to the ETs, when the original Bible talks about Jehovah, they were referring to them because it was the Jehovah or Theoba that led Moses out of Egypt.
Say that one more time, because I was listening to you, and in my mind, kind of got confused because I'm so used to hearing it one way, and then you said it something else.
Yes, the pronunciation of the word Fiuba can also be Fiuba, which is very similar to the pronunciation or the way how people pronounce Jehovah.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, the two are related because according to this book, when the original Bible talks about Jehovah, they're actually referring to them, the Theobans, who led Moses out of Egypt.
Blowing my mind tonight. That's, being speechless isn't a good thing for a talk radio host, by the way. Maybe it is a good thing. I mean, it means I'm listening and engaged in the process, but of course it doesn't really help when it comes time to ask questions, but that's okay. I've actually got one here from Germantown Runner in the live chat who was stirring it pretty good. He says, how do the giants travel? Via multiverses, black holes, teleportation, spacecraft?
Okay. So they actually first arrived at a parallel universe, which is somewhere near the Earth atmosphere. So they stopped in a parallel universe because they didn't want other people on Earth to see them. After a brief stay in the parallel universe, he was transported into the spaceship, their spaceship. And then they traveled at a few times the speed of light into deep space. And then from the deep space, they traveled using what we can say teleportation, or what Michel de Marquet said is super substantiation, which is like a teleportation in which the spaceship was instantaneously teleported into another location. And then after that, they traveled again at a speed a few times faster than the speed of light to the planet Theoba. So this is how they got their planet. So it took them less than one day to arrive to the planet Theoba from Earth.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around faster than the speed of light.
That's just, yeah. So he says that the reason, well, he asked the question, how many times faster than the speed of light? He was told that this information is not to be given to him because of some reason, but there are more amazing things awaiting him to experience and to report on. And then there are like a few things that he was not allowed to know. Of course, if he doesn't know, we don't know. But the one reason for them to travel into deep space and then use teleportation was that if they were to use super substantiation or teleportation, like near Earth, then the spaceship would have exploded, would have been exploded. So they were only able to use teleportation in deep space to avoid a spaceship from exploding.
So my follow-up question to you, while I'm trying to wrap my head around all this speed and all this movement, did you think you were going to get contacted by these giants at some point?
Me? No. I personally have not. But I think that's not important as not as important as spreading the messages, because I think right now we are at a critical moment of time and like a crossroad, and I'm trying to get a message out to as many people as possible so that people can make the right decisions. At least certain people can make the right decisions, because this book is actually a warning to us. It's not a prophecy, but it's a warning. I can elaborate on that.
Because, yeah, go ahead. Because I was going to ask you, because that's kind of I don't want to say scary thing, but maybe it is.
Well, one of the most important messages in the book is that we have to be more spiritual in our lives when making decisions, and technology we think our technology is developing very fast with mobile phones or quantum computers or cryptocurrencies, but they're actually leading us to a more materialistic life. It's going to cause a lot of damages to our spirituality or the growth of spirituality, because when we focus too much on our material life, we don't evolve as much spiritually. Spiritual development is actually the purpose of life. And when we die, our astral body leaves the physical body, and then we get a life review process. So we review everything happened in our lifetime. We can feel the feelings of the others when we acted in a certain way. When we mistreated the person, that person's feelings would be felt by us when we die, after we die. So we judge ourselves. We evaluate how we did in our lifetime. And then if we focus too much on our material life, then our experiences would be very difficult to be filtered by the different, like, more easy analogy, like filtration system, because we only keep the good things or the spiritual lessons that we learn in our lifetime. How we helped others, how we give unconditional love to others, how we provided assistance to the people in need, especially the poor and the needy. We don't get to keep the experiences of how we enjoyed our material life, such as living in a mansion or driving a luxurious car or spending thousands or millions of dollars on luxury goods. We don't keep those kind of experiences, but we keep the experiences of how we helped others, how we loved others. But the technologies on Earth are actually leaning towards people into focusing more on the material enjoyment, which is really not the purpose of life. And we are at a very critical moment of time because in the last few decades, our technologies have risen into a stage in which kind of the steam engine and also other things have actually taken a toll, not only on the environment, but also on how people live. So if we don't change our ways, catastrophes are going to happen for sure. When the messages were given to Michel Demarquet, this group of loving ETs who showed great love to Michel Demarquet actually did one thing. One of the key main people, like Tao, the character in the book, actually pinched Michel Demarquet so hard that he actually hurt and got a bruise on his shoulder. They did such a brutality or terrible thing on him was just to make him remember the information given to him by the seven Tauri, because the information, the message was so important that he had to really pass on the messages word by word to us, the people on Earth, because if we don't really take the messages seriously, then something would happen. And I would refer people to the stories in the Bible, like the two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah. The people in the two cities behaved so badly, and that the Jehovah or actually destroyed the two cities, not really because of sodomy, but because the people in the two cities punished the people who did good things, who helped others. Like, if you really read the Jewish ancient scriptures, you're going to see that the people in the two cities punished a girl who gave food to a hungry person. They actually burned that girl. And they did a lot of terrible things to the good people, the kind-hearted people and the compassionate people. So that's why the Theobians believe that the people in Sodom and Gomorrah were setting a very bad example to the people who got in touch with them. They're like the cancer cells spreading the tumors to other parts of the body. So they had to take the cancer cells out, or the tumors out. So I think I'm doing everything possible to warn people. And this book is a warning to the people that they really should look inside of themselves to look for answers and to learn and to know, have the knowledge that spirituality is something that they should really pay attention to, not the material life.
So my question is, I guess it's more maybe following up and want to get a little bit more clarification, because this was 1987 he was getting this message, and I mean, we're, goodness, I'm trying to do math on the fly and I shouldn't, 35 years removed from that, and technology has boomed quite a bit in the last 35 years, and I totally agree that that prophecy or that warning or however you want to put it has come true, because we have been so less human in the last 35 years than we were before. And I don't see it slowing down. So I guess the point is that maybe we need to start paying attention to these things, just to make sure I'm
That's
hearing
right.
you correct. Okay.
That's right. We need to actually, I think there's a lot of information contained in the book that I really don't have a lot of time to elaborate.
I don't want you to give it all away, but I just wanted to make sure that we got that point out there, because, I mean, the proof is the time that's passed since the book was originally wrote, right? To get it, you know, just saying that here's one case study and that was right. I mean, dead on, spot on.
Yeah. I mean, there are also a lot of verifiable evidence or details contained in the book. I can elaborate a little bit more on the parallel universe and what happened in the Bermuda Triangle, and also the evidence or documented by David Politis, the missing 411.
Oh, go ahead, because he was on the show before, so go ahead.
Yes, yes. So what happened in the Bermuda Triangle was that there was a warp, or like a portal into a parallel universe. Planes or ships that are near that location, which is like a floating location, got sucked into this parallel universe. Once they're in the parallel universe, time stops and people don't feel any pain and don't feel any hunger. And so that's why, actually, Michel Demarquet went into the parallel universe and saw people wearing medieval clothes and also people in ancient times behaving like savages. And it reminds me of the missing 411 cases, strange cases, people who gone missing in the national parks in the U.S. in clustered locations. I believe that those clustered locations are where the warps of parallel universe existed. And David Pledis provided a lot of interesting details, such as people whose corpses were found were really strange in a way that it seemed that they didn't feel any pain at all. They walked to their bones, or they ran to their bones, and they had a lot of like bruises or injuries that if a person felt any pain, and they wouldn't have let themselves into those kind of pain or injuries. So this kind of coincides with the fact written in this book that people in parallel universe don't feel any pain and time stops. And also a lot of David Pledis, I really like him very much because he said that some people, after they were found after they went missing and after they were found, when asking what happened to them, they reported like a lot of descriptions that really didn't appear to be in the vicinity of where they went missing. So they were describing places in which didn't appear to be like where they went missing. They were like a different world. So this is really interesting because Michel de Marquet describes what happened to the parallel universe he went into, like to be very, very different from Australia or anywhere he visited. And I think this book, I mean, if you know him, if you know David Pilates, maybe you can ask him to read this book because it can be helpful to him, because I believe the parallel universe theory explains a lot of his missing 411 cases.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you.
Question from Kim in the chat room here. Have you you mentioned being interested in the paranormal. Have you ever seen anything paranormal, ghosts or UFOs or aliens or anything like that as you?
As myself, no. I'm very insensitive in a lot of ways. I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen a UFO. But I've heard people who are able to see ghosts, who have seen UFOs, who actually got contacted by the grave. I have a friend, a Chinese friend, who a few days ago contacted me, and she knew that I was into the UFOs, and she said she had this kind of experience happened like a few weeks ago, that she was paralyzed, and she saw this kind of two grays, and they shone a very bright light on her, and her pains or her injuries on her knee were kind of fully recovered. But she believed that she was implanted by them on her head. And coincidentally, Michel de Marquet spoke about the graves. In fact, he saw that there were at least 200 different ETs in our galaxy, at least 200 different races, different kinds of ETs. And the graves were actually, according to this group of ET from Theoba, they came from Category 1 planet, same as Earth. We are like elementary school students. The grades are also like elementary school students. The Theobans, on the other hand, came from a Category 9 planet. So they're like the professors. And they're highly evolved, I mean, the Theobans. A level higher than 9 will be the source, the creator of the universe. So the grays actually came to the Earth just to observe us. And they did put some implants onto about 150 or so of us because they really wanted to see how we respond to our increasingly decreased immune system. According to them, our immune system has been decreasing since 1948. After the atomic bomb was launched, so they are the Greys are also having the same problems. Their immune system has been decreasing over time, so they are the dying species. But on the other hand, there is absolutely no danger to us with their implants because, according to the Theoban, they have been observing the grays as well to make sure that they don't harm us in any way. So people who have the implants, don't worry. They're not harmful at all. So don't be afraid, not to be scared at all.
What about the, what is it, Rh blood type that I've heard so much about? Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, I know that the U.S. government has been working with the Grays or Rh1, I'm not really sure, but to gain their technologies. So in a sense, the elementary school students are learning from another elementary school student. We are learning the technologies from Category 1 planet, which is not bad, but if I were the U.S. government or anyone with a reasonable mind, I would learn from the best, learn from the category of Ninth Planet, the people there, and to learn how we can evolve better.
Seem like I'm jumping all over the place, probably because I am, because I'm looking at the clock and we're starting to run out of time, so I want to make sure I get as many of these things as I can. You mentioned the 89 past lives earlier. Have you ever tried to figure out how many you've had or why you why he would have had so many?
No, I'm not really, like, you know, I wanted to be hypnotized before. But for some reason, I just, in my subconscious mind, I just know that I'm not able to be hypnotized. So I never tried again. So I don't know how many past lives that I have had. I guess a lot, because I just have a very intuitive mind. And it seems that this book resonates a lot to me. And that indicates that I'm an old soul, just like other people who resonate to the messages in this book.
And go ahead and promote the book one more time before, because I've got a bunch of little random, I don't want to say off-the-wall questions, but general interest questions I want to get to here with you, just because. So let's put a close on the book for a second.
Okay. The book is titled Hioba Prophecy, or Hioba Prophecy, Hioouba. People can find this book on Amazon. And my personal website is chinasona.org, chinasona.org.
So, like I said, I got a little rapid fire here for you to kind of because we're getting close on time and I don't want to push us too far over and get into a deep point and have to cut you off. So here we go. What's your favorite book? I guess there's a preference, not the book you translated, but another book.
Yes. My favorite book is this one, Hioba Prophecy. There are like a few other favorite books that I'm into, and but they're like the books written by some medical doctors such as Brian Weiss, who studied past lives using hypnotherapy, and a few others. I strongly suggest people to read this book. At least. I also like David Platt's book, The Missing 411 series of books.
Yeah, they're interesting. If you're interested, I tell the people that are interested in true crime, they need to pick up some of those books because it falls right into that. But it's not really crime, but close enough in some of those cases. Well, some of them are, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
And I also like Barbara Brennan's book, Hands of Light. She is great. I love her books.
Yeah. So, favorite breakfast?
Favorite breakfast? I would say celery juice and also fruits. I follow the medical medium Anthony William, and I believe he is the right person to follow because a lot of his messages are very similar to the messages in this book.
I'm fascinated because I think you're probably the first person to say celery juice when I asked that question. so when you're not out talking about this book and translating stuff, what are you up to?
Well, I do a lot of research. Right now, I'm actually trying to develop an aura camera to study the human energy field, to capture the human energy field. I'm always learning and also investigating or coming up with different things to help people out, either materialistically or spiritually. And I think when people have the knowledge, they know how to act.
An aura camera. That sounds, I want to say neat, but I know that isn't the modern word, and some young kid is laughing at me right now. But that's okay, though. You like living in California?
Yes, I like the weather, and actually, I like Los Angeles specifically because it's actually a mixture of Asian culture and Latino culture. I speak Spanish, and I love all the people, the Jewish people and the Black people, the African American people, and the Latinos and Asians, Chinese, Japanese, Koreans. I love everyone.
Is there anything you don't do?
I don't take any drugs, hallucinogenic drugs, because according to this book, it's actually a danger to take any form of hallucinogenic drugs because they affect negatively your human energy field or your aura, or in another way, like your astral body. So people who can see auras, people who can see the human energy field, tell me that they can tell immediately if a person smoke or take hallucinogenic drugs or not, because the aura looks very ugly.
So, I've got a question here from Captain Canada. Have you ever been to Canada?
Canada, yes, I've been there once in the past, to Vancouver.
Did you like it? I'm sure that would be the next question out of their mouth, so we're just going to have to...
Yes, I like it. I was visiting a friend of mine from high school, and she is a great friend of mine, but she is, like a lot of my friends are not into this book, and I try to persuade her, but she is just not into it.
that's okay. It's not for everybody, but you have to try, though. I get it.
Yeah.
Trust me. Just like this show, you have to try to talk people into listening, but most of the time, I don't know if it's any different for a book or not, because I know sometimes, there's the time commitment either way.
Yeah, I'm just like planting seeds. Some will grow, some will not. And it's up to the person, actually.
Yeah, you're right. You just got to plant it and then hope it grows. And if not, well, there's a fair, as long as a few do, right? That's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate you immensely, Samuel, for hanging out with me and getting back. And I do appreciate you dropping the note that said you wanted to be on, and I'm glad you did.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for dealing with my little technical snafu off the top. So,
no problem.
Talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Have a good night.
Good night.
And there we go. There's Samuel Chung. Interesting story with the guest tonight. And I don't know what to make of all that. I'm still trying to wrap my head around a number of those points about time and travel and prophecy and Bible and Jesus and aliens. And there's not many guests that will take me back and leave me speechless for moments of time. But this one did tonight, and I enjoy that quite a bit. So we're glad to have that around here. So, yeah. We're doing good, and we'll be back, and we got some more stuff coming down the pike here, and a lot of stuff. A lot of changes, I think, maybe. I've been talking to Germantown Runner and some others today about maybe some things. We'll see how it all comes together. I don't know. We'll see. Germantown Runner has no idea when the post is coming, so he won't know if I hit it or not. I love that. And it's about a minute from now. Of course, it'll be playing. I've already missed it or hit it when he gets to hear it because of the delay. But at least he'll have a clue when it's coming. I just want to take a moment here and remind people, if they're not on the Duck Pond, you could hear the crowd tonight. And you should see the buzz and the energy that is on the pond at certain points. And boy, it really helps me, because tonight I'm not feeling the best. If you can't hear it in my voice, a little stuffed up, a little sinusy, a little plugged up in the ear even. It's good to have a good crowd and a bunch of energy to kind of suck in and live off tonight. So I'm glad they were there. But if you're not subscribed, you need to subscribe, because this is what you get around here. You get fun stuff, unedited, live. You get it. You just get it, and it's raw. And some nights it's good, and some nights it's not. It's okay. It's the Maori Report. It's what we live for around here.
It's the Maori Report. Yeah, the Maori Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.